I'm Allison Jacobson, a transformational coach for women in midlife who are ready to rediscover who they were before they took on the roles of mom, partner, caregiver, and manager of everyone in the family. Women who are ready to live out their dreams but don't know or are afraid to take those first steps. I want to help you make midlife the time when you achieve all of your goals. So let's get started. Hey, everybody, and welcome to Midlife Mavericks. I am your host, Allison Jacobson, and I'm so glad you have found this podcast. This is for every woman in midlife who is looking to reclaim their dreams, find self-confidence, and create a kick-ass life for themselves. We have women on who are doing amazing things in midlife, as well as experts who can help us in every area of our life, from finance to health and wellness, to food, to sex, to business, you name it. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review and share, because that is how more women are going to find us. And check out my website, allison-jacobson.com. There you can find a free resource, 5 Steps to Release Fear and Live Boldly. I'm so excited to have on today, Vanessa Elias is somebody who every parent needs to know. She is a mental health activist. She is a certified parent coach. She is a NAMI parent support group facilitator and the founder of Thrive with a Guide. Vanessa has been featured on NPR, PBS, and in the Wall Street Journal. She is also the mom of 3 children, 2 in college and 1 in high school. Her business, Thrive with a Guide, she works with parents and children ages 3 to 44, and together they problem solve, shift the lens, and develop actionable steps to change and improve life in their home. She also writes for local and national news sites and speaks to many different audiences, including as a speaker and as a panelist with other mental health professionals. And earlier this year, if that's not enough, she founded the movement Block Party USA as a cure for our country's loneliness, social isolation, divisiveness, and the youth mental health crisis. So thanks, Vanessa, for coming on.
I'm so happy to be here, Allison.
So Vanessa, we've known each other for many years. We have several kids in college at the same time. And I was always struck by your business and how necessary it is. So start out, tell our listeners a little bit more about how you got started and what Thrive with a Guide does.
Sure. I actually have an undergrad degree in psychology. So I was always interested in how the mind worked. And I recently found an old paper of mine that I had written for a course. And in there, it talked about what I wanted to do when I grew up. And it was about helping parents help their kids, which was amazing. I think I was 21 at the time when I wrote that. And I just find that fascinating. And through my own experience of parenting 3 kids, my eldest having struggled with mental health issues, was a tricky child from birth, through my own experience of finding the journey extremely difficult, not being able to find resources, not even know who to ask. And then when you did find someone, they didn't know about other things. They all worked in their little silos of information. And through my real life lived experience, and then also being a NAMI parent support group facilitator, I learned how many families are struggling with these very things. And it was really therapeutic for me to be able to help other people with the problems that are, you know.
And just for our listeners who don't know, NAMI stands for National Association of Mental Illness.
National Alliance on Mental Illness. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you for pointing that out. Yep.
So, you know, it's sad to say, but it's only been recently where families have felt like they have resources. You're absolutely right. I mean, I think when we were growing up, anybody with mental health struggles were isolated, the parents as well as the kids. I can't imagine how that must have been.
Yeah. I mean, it's still a struggle. It's still highly stigmatized, especially in communities where have your nice outer presentation of yourself, your house, that feels like something to be ashamed of and to keep private. And with that, you know, nothing good, well, besides truffles, grow in the dark. And that is, you know, to have that, be able to have the conversation out in the open is really important, because only then can you get the resources that you need for your family.
So let's start with, because I do, this is a audience for midlife women, mm-hmm. and women in midlife have kids that are 16 years old and they have kids that are 30 years old. So let's start with those families who have teens who are struggling with mental illness, who maybe are in, you know, early grades of high school. Where do they start? Where do they go for help?
That's such a good question. I think one of the important things is to make sure you observe and document some of the behavior changes you've seen in your child so that you have that. It can be really scary. There is, you know, a fine line between what is normal for this age, right? There's a lot of unrest and change, and they're, you know, finding out who they are and just all the teenage struggles. And what's not normal? You know, when should you be worried? And my line is, it's a problem when it's a problem, which means if you're not functioning in daily life, if they're not functioning, if they're not able to get up for school, if they're not able to, you know, honor the commitments they've made, if they're not functioning. And so that's when you really need to take some action. First thing is to talk with them. See if, you know, they can tell you what's going on. If they know, they may not know. They may not be able to articulate that. And so looking for a therapist, I always recommend going to psychology.com, because it's a place where you can put in your zip code and find a resource for a clinician in your area. Also, I'm obviously a big fan of NAMI, National Alliance on Mental Illness. There are support groups throughout the country. Everything is free, which is unusual in the mental health world. And you can find support and find resources that way. Also, talk to your child's school. See if they've seen anything, if they're noticing a difference. And they can be a partner in this to support your child. A big part of their day is at school. So, you know, seeing if that's a place that they can offer support.
Do you feel like schools have become more equipped to handle students with mental illness in the recent years, or is it still hard to find good resources in the schools?
Yes and no. I think it really depends where you live. I think it depends on the school, on the finances available in the district, if it's public, if it's private. But things have definitely improved, because quite frankly, schools haven't had a choice. They get thrown in the middle of it. And, you know, kids will leave a residential treatment center, a hospital, and how do you bring them back into the classroom? And so they've really, their needs, thankfully, more money is going to schools now to help with mental health issues, because it's really a staffing issue. Yes, the point of a school is to teach your children, but if they're not okay, they can't learn. So it's really important.
And what, you know, you brought up a good point about change in behavior if they're sleeping and not going to school. I mean, you know, I can see a parent saying, oh, they're just lazy, or, oh, they're hating their classes, this is baloney. Like, how do you tease out when it's really a mental health issue?
Yeah, it's very hard. It's also one of the things that I find, something that I wish I knew as a younger parent, is that kids aren't doing this on purpose. Mm-hmm. They're not trying to be difficult. They're not trying to be lazy. They're not able to do these things. They're struggling, and their behavior is communication that something's not okay. And so finding, you know, building the close, you know, having a relationship where you can talk about anything, obviously, as a first point of it, but knowing that they're not trying to manipulate you. If they don't want to go to school, why, like, what's underneath this? And the ideas that we think as parents are the reason are often not the reason. So doing some collaborative problem solving is a really good way of, together, what's going on? What's getting in the way? You know, what can you do today if a child is not able to go to school? Finding out, you know, just getting them through the doors is really important.
Yeah, I can imagine that. You know, I mean, you can't literally pick them up and throw them in the car and take them to school. And at some point, I'm sure it's got to be so difficult for parents. You know, you mentioned in your introduction about shift the lens and develop actionable steps to change and improve life at home. What do you mean by shift the lens?
Well, exactly. The shifting the lens is the biggest work I feel like I do, is helping parents interpret the behavior they're seeing and looking at it from a different way, right? If you're thinking like, why is my kid doing this to me? Why are they trying to be difficult? They just want attention, right? They're just lazy. Rather than really understanding, they're struggling and their behavior is communicating they're not okay. Something's going on. They need your support. So just as simple as that is to understand, you know, we think we understand what their behavior is communicating, but most often we don't. And it's the kids are doing the best they can. And actually, I have to mention this, you know, so often we are so hard on ourselves as parents. We blame ourselves for things that happen, things we should have done, could have done. And the truth is, the most important thing is to have self-compassion, because mm-hmm. you have done the best you could mm-hmm. with the skills, tools, and resources you had. So repeat that to yourself, right? People, it's you. And so don't feel like this is on you. You did the best you could, and your child is doing the best they can. And together you guys can get through this and figure out how to make things better.
Yeah. And so many of my clients struggle with that, of feeling like the inadequacy of a parent and the blame and the self-doubt and the limiting beliefs. And it is very hard. I want to look at it from a different perspective for a moment, though. You always want what's best for your child, but at some point, your child's issues start taking a toll on your own mental health. How do you erect loving boundaries while protecting yourself?
Absolutely. That is an issue that comes up a ton. And I think of it as the, you know, you're only as happy as your least happy child, which is so wrong and so destructive on so many levels. First of all, our happiness, depending on our child, places an enormous another level of pressure on them to be okay, right? Not only are they concerned with their own well-being and their own happiness, now they have to carry the burden of my mom's a mess because of me, right? My mom can't function. My mom's so sad. I'm doing this. I'm bad. It's more shame. It's harder for them. So the most important thing that you can do is get a life. This one, get a life, find mm-hmm. joy, right? Find hobbies, be okay, independent of your child, right? And that doesn't mean we don't love them, but when we sacrifice ourselves for our children, it makes it harder for them. They feel guilty, they feel shame, and it's not fair to them, right? Like in terms of that our well-being rests on them. And the worst part of it is, I had one woman say to me once, "Now I'm just as sick as he is." And that's what happens. And I've seen it many times. You know, we can't do this, we can't go there because of our upset about this. We can't. And it's destroying two lives. And we love our children, we want the best for them, but believe it or not, our well-being is the biggest predictor of their well-being. So if that lets, you know, I use that as a tool for people to women to motivate themselves, because moms give so much, right? We sacrifice and we give too much, right? Mothering is hard as it is. Let's not make it harder. And it's use that as your impetus to take care of yourself, knowing that that will increase. It's like the oxygen mask on you first, mm-hmm. right? You can't help your kid if you're not okay.
Yeah.
And so find ways to be okay.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And it's very challenging. I mean, as you know, my son has intellectual disabilities, and I worry about him, but I also need my own life. And you have to. Let's take the next step. So you have a 16-year-old or a 17-year-old, they have mental health issues. Maybe they've even you know, had self-harm issues or have talked about self-harming, and now they want to go to college or community college or vocational school, but they want to go away. What do you do?
Well, I think the standpoint, I mean, life is a journey, right? And if that was, it's really about where they are right now. How are they? Are they okay? Are they, you know, it's recovery first. So, you know, so many times the urge is to go somewhere else. Like if I just were somewhere else, everything would be better, right? It's just where I live here. It's just being in this house, being in the school, this town. And unfortunately, wherever you go, there you are. So it's a parent needs to stick with their instinct, their gut, if they think this their child's not ready, to make sure they're having the support and growth they need, to make sure the parent is providing those opportunities, which means you're not doing their laundry, you're not waking them up in the morning, you're not right though, you're not making their lunch every day. Those are things that they have to be responsible for themselves to show that they are ready to be out in the world.
Amen. Because it's right? not about age. It's about, you know, you can have the most immature 30-year-old failure to launch, or you can have a really amazing 17-year-old who's managing everything. And you're absolutely right.
Totally. It's really, it's, and I call it delayed launch. I hate that failure. It's delayed. That's all.
Delayed launch. You're right. You're right. A friend of mine always says they just haven't cooked long enough yet.
Exactly. And we can do what we can do. You know, that's in our control. We cannot control another human being, right? We cannot, but we can control ourselves. And we are, you know, a family is like a mobile hanging above a crib, right? You move one piece and everything shifts. So what you're doing to make change in your life will affect your family and your child that you're worried about. So that's where your power is.
Now, I have a lot of clients, as I'm sure you do, where there is just such turmoil and chaos in the house because both parents aren't on the same page about their child's mental health, well-being. What do you do? How do you navigate that?
Yeah, that's a really tricky one. And that's parents need to understand that that's making things worse. Right. One of my lines is you can't always make things better, but you can always make things worse. So learn how to not do that. And parents come to the parent-child relationship with their own traumas, right? Their own experiences. So as a child, parent-child relationship, there is a child. How are they made to feel? How did they manage emotions? Now they're in this parent-child relationship again. And that is, they're being triggered, right? That laid dormant for however many years they didn't have kids and they were out of the house. So it's really important that parents work on themselves individually to find out what's coming up for me and find a way to have the important discussions without their kids present so that they can come together and be one, because it's unhealthy, right? The triangulation that can happen with two, the three, and it's exhausting. And we don't have that kind of energy anymore.
Yeah. No, I agree. It gets to that point. And I think I agree with you. It's so hard for the child to see this happening too. So either they're manipulating a situation or they're just so stressed out and triggered by it. It's terrible.
Well, it's also, you'd be surprised to hear, but it actually terrifies kids if they have too much power. Mm-hmm. And in a situation like that, the child has too much power. If they are, the parents are kind of like puppets for them, right? That they're manipulating. And that's really scary to a kid of any age.
Yeah.
So.
So I think one of the struggles that I'm learning now that I have two over the age of 21 and many of my clients deal with this, like you said, we're always mothers, we're always going to worry, but in the eyes of the law, once our kids are 21, they're adults and they are making decisions on their own and you may not be able to help them. How do you navigate? How do you help a child who is over 21, who may have suicidal ideation, who has, you know, mental health issues and is not med compliant. Like that has to be such a difficult experience for parents.
100%. And it's terrifying. And really, it's unfortunately, it's 3 years earlier. It's not 21, it's 18, that parents no longer have any authority, which, as an aside, I always tell my parents of kids 18 and up, make sure you have a power of attorney and a health proxy signed, because the worst thing in the world is to not be able to get any information on your child's medical situation. Mm-hmm. So on their 18th birthday and after, you can have that done. So highly recommend that. And the other important, there's so much of parenting is like walking. It's, I was, my analogy is suffocate or abandon. Right? We think we do too much for them. We're too controlling. We're too in their face on things, or we're like, okay, fine, you're on your own. Everything has to be in the middle of that, right? There is not just one way or the other. So we worry about our kids, but what are we communicating when we worry? That we don't think they can handle it, right? And when we fragilize them, they see us as a mirror to who they are. They will be fragile. If we are constantly worrying and calling them about things or texting them or whatever, the message they're getting is, my mom doesn't think I can handle this. My mom doesn't think I can handle this, right? Now, on the flip side, you won't be like, okay, you're on your own, you got it. That's not helpful either, right? So it's a checking in. How are you doing? And the most important thing is to control your reaction. This goes back to, I always call it the emotional roller coaster. Like if your kid's on the emotional roller coaster, the last thing they need is for you to get in there with them. They need you to be on the ground as a rock, as a resource. And a lot of parents, they just get in that front car with them and they're whipping around and it's not helpful. So that's a really important thing, that they can talk to you about it. And if you really are concerned about your child's safety, it is extremely important that you ask if they've thought about ending their life. If they've thought about, yeah, basically ending their life. And if they have, do they have a plan? And those are the scariest things you can ever ask your kid. But the important thing to know is that asking those things don't make a kid think of them. You're not, people are afraid if they ask that question that their child will be like, oh, that's an idea. That's been, no evidence is there for that. What it does actually is, if they have thought about it, it's a relief. Someone's asking the question that no one would. And there, it's an opportunity for them to get out of that in their head and talk about it and then get support. So that is what, you know, asking those questions. And it's really hard. It's hard for parents and they're worried. I just had a client, or we were just talking about this past week, of them needing to do that. And they were very afraid because their child, they felt like they were able going to crack at any minute and didn't want to push it. That's exactly when you need to. It's important. It's not going to cause a problem, but it can prevent one. So that's,
I think you also as a parent have to have the strength to call the police if there's a mental health check that needs to happen, if they're not in the same town as you or they are away. I mean, you know, they may hate you for doing it, but at the other hand, you may be saving their life.
100%. And there's, in the state of Connecticut, we have 211 across the, it's a mobile crisis unit all across the US. We have 988, which is the mental health equivalent of 911. And yeah, that's a really hard call to make, but it can be a life-changing call, and better be safe than sorry.
Yeah. So going back to, as you said, it's not a failure to launch, it's a delay launch. You know, you've got a kid who doesn't necessarily have mental health issues, but has graduated college and is really not doing much except sitting on your couch and eating your food and not getting a job. You know, and again, it could be one parent saying, oh, well, it's hard, and another parent saying, get your butt out there and find a job. Where is the happy medium about that?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a tricky one. And it is all the more common. Also in part, there are a lot of parents who, well, that's a different situation if they're sitting there and not trying to get a job. But a lot of parents feel badly. Like, well, when I was their age, this is what I was doing. When I was their age, I had this already. I had a house and a kid. And the world is not the same world, right? And we need to cut ourselves a break and our kids a break by understanding Lawrence Steinberg. He has a new book. It's about parenting young adults. And he says that it's a 5-year difference. So what we did at 25, our kids will do at 30.
That's so amazing.
So it's super helpful for parents to go, oh, okay, then this is normal, because we're comparing it to our own experience. And that makes us feel like we're failing to launch our kids, right? Or they're failing to launch, but really like the cost of buying a home, or, you know, just the cost of living in general and what's available to them. It's a 5-year gap.
Is that because, though, did COVID play into that?
It probably did, but I think that gap was in place before. I had many conversations with psychologists and school leaders, actually, who were comparing, the brain is different because of the way we've raised our kids, which, you know, something to think about with the grandkids maybe, but the way we've raised them, they've had limited life experience and their prefrontal cortex grows because of experience. And so their prefrontal cortex hasn't had enough opportunity to grow. We have snowplowed, we have helicoptered, we've done all these things to protect our kids because we love them. We have the best intentions, but it's had an unintended side effect of not having all those experiences to grow the prefrontal cortex.
Okay. I've heard the term helicopter parent. I have never heard the term snowplow. What is snowplow?
Snowplow is that you clear the path for your child. It's a snowplow. And actually I heard a new one today. It was curling, a curling parent.
Oh, geez.
So a curling parent is even more exact than a snowplow, because do you know the curling, how they but they push the ice so the thing will go in a certain way. The concept, you know, the goal is to prepare your child for the path, not prepare the path for your child.
Yeah. And, you know, I always talk about this with my kids too, because my husband has primary progressive MS. There's a lot he can't do. My son has intellectual disabilities. And I always said with my son, I didn't care if he learned academics. He can always, you know, use a phone or something, but he needs the life skills. He needs to know how to cook, to clean, to be able to take care of himself. That's the most important. And then same thing with my girls. I didn't have time to do it. I was caring for everybody and working. And so my kids started making their lunches when they were in first grade for themselves. They knew how to do everything. I sent both my girls off to college knowing how to change a tire and jumpstart a car. And it's like, to me, those are the important life lessons,
right? That's awesome. Makes you feel, I mean, that is such a bigger picture, right? It is life lessons, but it also, you've built competence, mm-hmm. right? They feel competent. Mm-hmm. They feel capable. Mm-hmm. Those, when we do those things for our kids, we rob them of that opportunity. So instead of thinking, I love my child so much, I want to do all this for them. No, you think of it as I'm taking that opportunity away from them, mm-hmm. Not their opportunity to feel capable and confident. And so, those things are really important. And going back to your guy on the couch, I think, you know, as I said before, it's important for the parents to get on the same page. It's important that fear not drive the bus. So like, I would say, don't live it twice, right? Like if, oh my God, they're going to be on the couch when we're, you know, 80 years old and we're going to be, you know, like just stay in the now. And then what really needs to happen is you need to look at everything that you're paying for and list it out. So that includes electricity, the mortgage, the rent, Wi-Fi, everything. And then have a meeting is what I was going to say. And what I'm a huge fan of family meetings, or just meetings in general. Families are the only social organization that don't have regular meetings. And the most important thing that you can do is address something in a meeting. Like at work, you wouldn't be like walking through the halls going, oh, we're all redlining on that. You know, we're just going to go in there. And you come together, you discuss, you identify the problem, you bring a team together, you discuss options. And that's exactly what needs to happen in persistent challenges in the home. You need to have a meeting. And that is, you know, that I recommend for parents, like when their kids are applying to colleges or next step in their life or looking for a job. This is, you know, when are you going to? So once a week, you have a status meeting, which means you know that there's a time that you're going to talk about this. So your relationship doesn't need to become that. Because that's the problem, is when we don't give we don't give space to it and the opportunity to talk about it, it becomes your relationship. Like, did you apply for the job? Did you do this school? Did you write your essay? Did you write like all these things? And then it deteriorates the most important thing, which is your relationship. So having a meeting to have those discussions.
That is such a great point. I love that. I want to cover a couple more things, but I want to make sure everybody knows where to find you, which is thrivewithaguide.com, also on Instagram, on Facebook. But Vanessa's got a lot of great information and resources up there. You can sign up for her newsletter. So thrivewithaguide.com, and that'll all be in the show notes. Tell me about Block Party USA.
Yeah, thanks for bringing it up. So it's my new passion project. As background, I have moved 28 times.
Oh my gosh.
And yeah, which is crazy, especially because I've lived here for 10 years now, which is the longest I've lived anywhere. Double, actually, the longest I've lived anywhere. And because I've had to rebuild, you know, be the new person, and I'm talking states and countries. And so because I've had to do that so many times, I know the effort it takes. I also know what it's like to feel really isolated and lonely. I tell the story of when we moved to London with my two oldest kids, when I'm filling out the registration form in the office, and I literally don't have a single person in the country to put down as an emergency contact. I don't have anyone besides my husband and me that I know. And the kindness of the registrar saying, you can put my name and my number, right? How much that meant to me. So I know that one person can really make a difference. I know what it takes to build community. I know the benefit of it and have experienced it. And I know Dr. Vivek Murthy, the U.S. Surgeon General, has issued 2 reports, on one on the youth mental health crisis and one on our isolation and loneliness crisis. People don't realize it, but loneliness is like smoking 15 cigarettes a day. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine? A pack and a half a day is the same as being lonely.
That is unbelievable.
Unbelievable, right? Mm. And then all the concern over like the obesity numbers, it pales in comparison to loneliness, the death rate, and the health impact of loneliness.
And that probably feeds in, though, no pun intended, because when you're lonely, what are you doing? You're sitting on the couch watching Netflix, eating food probably. So yeah.
Well, I'm a believer of health at every size, which is a whole different podcast. But it's really a serious health issue. And this is a way. So a couple of years ago, what was it now? It was the elections of 2016. I was part of a community civility group trying to figure out how to increase civility. Around those elections, there was a lot of contentious banter. And that's when I first saw my window for block parties. And then as I began my free play work and helping younger kids have the opportunity to have more free play, and how that's connected to decrease in free play, increase in anxiety and depression, it was the perfect fit to introduce block parties in our town here. So they became Wilton's Big Block Party Weekend. And twice a year, we encourage people to have organized block parties in their road. And there have been hundreds of block parties with thousands of people. They are a type of event where you put your phone down. So the goal is not to take pictures and, you know, but to be connecting face to face, because when we're together, we learn that we have much more in common than we are different, and people feel connected, and it is an easy way to connect. There are so many benefits, right? In bad weather, to have resources, you know, playmates for your kids, When you go for a walk, just saying hello and feeling like you belong, there is the stories that came out of that were incredible. And I was then inspired to have this be a nationwide effort. So yeah, it's now called blockpartyusa.org. And it's to have people. So I bring this up because the most important thing in the world is to be seen, heard, and loved for who you are and to matter. And you, everyone listening to this matters. You matter and you can make a difference. So organizing a block party in your road, even if it's just four people that get together, is a success right there. You're connecting, you're making lives better. And this is especially true for us with teens and young adults who are home. Do not let them stay home, right? Give them a job, carry the cooler, organize games for the little kids. Because if you're not feeling good about yourself, you don't feel like you matter. So put them in situations that they can help and make a difference. So Block Party USA is just a win-win-win as far as I'm concerned. So I'm really excited. Well,
and I can tell you, we did one in our garage. It was held because it was raining. And it's so great because you're right. We know everybody around. You know, if there's something that happens, my mother lives with us. So, you know, if she's alone, it's great to know there's people to look out for. Okay. So I always end my podcast with the question of, what is a midlife maverick to you?
Oh, midlife maverick is someone who has lost the weights and chains of her younger years of self-doubt and self-criticism and giving too much to others. And learning how to take care of herself and what her needs and wants are and having them met. So yeah, I love your group. I think it's fabulous.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, Vanessa, thank you so much. Again, people can find Vanessa at thrivewithaguide.com. Thank you so much, everybody. Have a great day. See you next time. Bye now.